Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games, of an SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Weiner Hanna join us. We have Talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com. And you search for call ID 17702 or SFU on call or Starfleet Universe on call. You'll find this. And, of course, if you want the best online experience, what you can do is you can go to twitch.tv. Yes, I said twitch.tv. So good, twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you will find this there. And you'll be able to join the wonderful chat room and be part of that wonderful audience there. Just remembered. Okay. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to contact me via Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it this week, you can find me over at sfuoncall or Paul Franz, PAYFRANZ, or Franz Games, FRANZGAMES, and there's no T in either one of those Franzes. And, of course, some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Petrick was working on the Orion Master Starship book and also a little bit of the Module R6 to have it moved to ebook form. Gene was having a little issue with the scanner, so that got delayed a little bit. Steve Petrick is now on antibiotics because he had a massive infection, and he's not allowed to work until that infection is gone. He's on antibiotics, so he'll be good. He'll be good. Just, he has to rest and take it easy for a bit. So both those things will get back to back on the road and go forward. And of course, this week in Found on the Online Store is FNE Tactical Operations 2021. It's currently $45, and that's for the hard copy of this book. And the Tactical Operations has more ships and rules for the Federation Empire with all the crunchiness that you've come to expect. The X-Maulers, for when you absolutely positively need to destroy something, need leaders. Now you have war cruiser leaders and war destroyer leaders being raided. Oh, block them with your new light gunboat tenders. Sterile fortresses will protect those vulnerable areas. And there are shipyard functions to provide efficient ways to manage your construction schedule. Now, there are flexible command points to aid your admirals. Moving on forward to the SFB Online tournament, the Sapphire Star 15 tournament. We still have one slot available, possibly two, depends upon the one person who signed up. They signed up. Problem is, they haven't paid yet. You need to pay. Sorry. That's part of the deal. Is this Sapphire Star tournament is a paid for tournament? Cost you $10. Now, all you have to do is win one game and you get that $10 back. But I would definitely sign up for that. I'm waiting a little while longer. If by midweek or sometime next week it's not filled, I will then put my hand into the ring and play then. When it comes to the library report, sorry, no updates on either the SFB or the FedCom libraries. Both of those have remained the same, and I'll apologize. I've not got around to the SFB library, which I should have gotten to by this point. I've been focusing on other things, mainly Starfleet Warlord stuff. So with that is the news for this week. Man, it's me, the one all Paul fans welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we've got Doug. Say hi, Doug.
Hi, Doug.
And we have Jeff. How are you doing,
Good
Jeff?
evening, everyone.
And last but certainly not least, we have Barry. How are you doing, Barry?
Hey, I'm doing fabulous. How are you doing?
Good, good. My O's just wrapped up, sealed up, and put the baby to bed. They are now the AL East champions. So, awesome.
Congrats.
So, they actually... They get the first day off, and that's which is going to be next Tuesday is the first day of the postseason, which reminds me of probably sometime in the next few days I have to go order on YouTube TV, so because I don't have actual regular TV, I ordered YouTube TV during the next month to pay so I can watch all of the baseball games, the playoffs because. Unfortunately, MLTV does not have the rights to all of the all the games, because that's it seemed who was it?
Such a confusing patchwork of rights there.
Yeah, well, that's the problem is the rights belong to the TV station or TV networks, and depends upon who you're talking to, and. There, you know, MLB, my understanding is like MLB is trying to get all those rights slowly, one at a time. So basically, we can have it so we don't have blackouts when it comes to streaming anymore. And because that's one thing I found out, I think that NFL, I don't think they have a streaming package. It's all through the TV networks. So.
I think they do.
No.
Well, I mean, I just don't. Not interested enough to go find it.
Yeah, because one they have a streaming, but it's for outside the country. Yeah.
Now that has to do probably with the rights associated and tied up with the NFL Sunday Ticket that was a staple of DirecTV for many years.
Yeah, it's now bought by YouTube TV. Yeah.
And I think it's being served by Amazon Prime. It's crazy.
Oh, Amazon only has, I think, the Thursday night games. And the YouTube TV, I think I forget what they have. They bought the rights to something. I forget what. I think, to be honest, I don't remember. Whether it's, I think it might be Sunday night games. They bought it, got it out of from ESPN, I think. It's weird, but anyhow, so what were we talking about right before we start?
Oh yeah, that guy's service alligator that he got turned away with in Philly.
Oh, jeez.
Did you see the picture?
A service alligator? What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a big news item.
I know I'm from the South, but we got to do a better job of herding Florida man back down south.
Yeah. Well, this is Pennsylvania man. And this guy actually lives in like Jonestown, Pennsylvania, which not too far from where I'm at. And actually, Paul's closer to that.
Yeah.
I think. And this guy has like a 4 or 5 foot alligator on a leash that he somehow got registered as an emotional support pet because, you know, nothing says love and cuddliness like a 6 foot freaking alligator. And he's like, and he showed up to the Phillies game, the opener for the Philly Pittsburgh series. And he's like, they turned his ass away. He's like, but it's my support alligator. Well, the picture alone is like it worth 1,000 words because the guy looks like smarmy in it. And it's like, I just swear that man must be trolling like the world. doing a good job of it. So yeah, he has the Gorn representation in Philly, but it was rejected by, sadly, the, staff at the... whatever it is, Verizon Park, whatever. I don't know what the heck it is.
Those evil speciesists.
Exactly. Just because it will kill you and eat you doesn't mean it's bad. In a more perfect universe, you would be invited over for the shoemaking and barbecue time.
True.
Yeah.
But anyhow.
Side of the belts.
Yep.
Yeah.
The main topic for this evening was going to be the main topic last week, and that went out the window. And for patience zero, I think it is his handle on YouTube. Don't worry, Gary's not going to be here.
Aww.
Well,
so what is the topic?
Yeah, he doesn't like Gary's voice. I'm not sure what it is. He just says it and just went, okay, fine, whatever. You know, he's gonna skip that one. I don't care. I actually love when Gary comes on, and especially because of his historical background. He knows so much about the SFU history, you know, the history of the different empires and so forth. And I really think that gives a greater sense of context when it comes to the game itself, because in some cases, I think it's really important to know the context of how the history basically was laid out and how things are in that history. You know, because let's be honest here. ADB did their best to try to keep on selling product. The problem is there's a point where you have too many ships. You know, and at that point, what happened?
It's saturation.
Saturation, and they started being, people kept on calling them cookie cutter.
Well, that actually comes out of a particular thing. That's not really a background issue. That's more of a general war thing.
Right.
But it was also a design philosophy that they had during that time when they were publishing a lot of stuff about the general war. And that was their main thing in their captain's logs. And the design philosophy was, well, if we make this for one race, we have to make it for all of them. They all get a version of whatever.
Right.
Which, in a sense, is literally nearly the opposite of what the core original game was, where you have the Romulans are so freaking different to the Federation or the Klingons, and the Klingons are so radically different from the Gorns and the Tholians, and because any are kind of similar to the Klingons, especially if you get them both in the same room and tell them that. But it's like there was such a massive uniqueness. I mean, you get into like when they added the Hydrans in, they added the Andromedans in.
Right.
And the issue that you get at this point when they go and they do this whole additional design around the general war, which ties in with Federation Commander. Federation and Empire.
Yes.
Yeah. It ties in with that a lot, is the only one that almost gets away from the cookie cutter thing is, you know, not the WIN, but the ISC. But they're designed from whole scratch from having the game in existence for quite some time already. But the cookie cutter thing,
one of the other issues you're talking about that plays right into this is the fact that they tried to turn around and fit the role of individual ships into a set box, if you will. Everybody has a frigate. Everybody has a destroyer. Right. Everybody has a cruiser, a battle cruiser, a dreadnought, battleship. And the thing is that with the Kzinti, or the Kzinti, the Federation, and to a lesser extent, the Gorn and the ISC, all of these things fit congruently around. The Klingons do too, but they don't call them the usual things.
Right.
And then you have the Hydrans. which just throw everything out. And when you turn around and you're not looking at Starfleet battles, but Federation and Empire, which works on a different metric, you end up almost needing a cheat sheet where you can turn around and look up, okay, this vessel, the Hydran Lord Paladin is their what? Oh, it's equivalent to their heavy dreadnought, or so forth. And forgive me, I'm probably a little off base on that. I'm not up to speed on the Hydrans all that much. But the thing is that you've got what, Hellbore armed cruiser, a fusion beam cruiser, and then you've got an actual dedicated cruiser carrier, which is one more cruiser hull than just about everybody else. And they've got, instead of having cruiser names, they've got names.
Right.
They've got class names.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another one of those points that it turns around and it makes it so much more difficult to try and turn around and standardize, for lack of a better way to put it, the typical fleet roles that people from other kinds of naval wargaming will expect.
I agree.
Yep.
Agreed.
It also adds a lot of the unique flavor to the game.
It does.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I agree with Doug that I think that was a bad thing overall when that occurred, you know. And then we had the whole expansion of the number of ships that each empire had, which was, I think, absolutely insane. Because
This is your war cruiser variant 27.
It's gotten to the point now where you've got so many little gotchas spread over so many different products that sometimes it's hard to keep up. Like, for example, what product are work boats in? You know, I think it's K2, but then again, K2's been on the horizon for years.
That's why they have the master annexes too.
And that helps to a degree, but the thing is that there's another aspect of that. It's like, okay, all right, I have to have all the, okay, I can find the SSDs out of Captain's Log. I can find some of the rules out of the Master Rulebook. And then for the R section notes on the individual hulls in question, you've got to get the appropriate R section product. Either the R book, which is, they've been lagging on getting those up to date and published digitally. But the thing is that it's like, at a certain point, even if you buy the Master Starship books, that's not going to help you out necessarily. You have to turn around and you have to have a huge binder of all the R books just to find out the one little trick, because apparently most people seem to like the odd stuff instead of the bread and butter ships.
What people like is being able to have mastery and control over something. And a lot of times they make the mistake that the gimmick thing is the thing. But it's endemic to how they've run the game. So there's that.
I have on more than one occasion thought about encouraging, pleading, outright begging that when they come up with the Battle Force 550 for 56, Captain's Log 56, they put product restrictions on the force. You can only use something that appears in basic, advanced, or the C module that introduces the Empire in question. So that it's more likely that people who don't have a quote unquote full set will be able to find themselves able to play the scenario.
Or they could publish them with the scenario.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, well,
that would save a lot of effort.
Well, to me, the biggest issue right now with the double nickel is, of course, the battle force for the FedCom, which was who they get matched up with a Klingon with fighters, which aren't even released yet.
Yeah,
so it's like. And they're supposed to come up with tactics against fighters in FedCom? where we have no T-bombs. We don't have some of the nice little toys that make it easier to deal with fighters, at least for Andromedans anyway. Really?
Yeah, it was kind of a nasty trick.
This is where you look at them and you say, okay.
But well, you've okay. got enough, you know, as I recall, you've got enough TR beams and phaser twos in the group that you put together, if memory mm-hmm. serves,
yep.
that you could basically ignore the fighters, scream right on in at reasonably high speed, and pretty much turn the carrier into toast and just keep going.
Yeah, because that was the one thing I calculated. The whole idea of my fleet at that point was just to have the maximum number of PA panels.
Yep.
On it. Because the really small ships I picked, I think they were the Vipers. Yeah, in fact, they were the Vipers. Only had one TR light on them. But they had four phaser twos. So phasers, they had a great number when it comes to TR beams. Not many, but they had the same amount of PA panels that the Cobras did, which is four and three. Four in the front, three in the back. But I got more ships. So, and overall, I got more defensive ability than if I took a smaller number of Cobras. So I was like, you know, I think that can be good. And actually, I took one Cobra, which was... That was the one with the DizDev device with it. And I took one.
Not the Python, the...
Not the Python. It was the CBR. The Reconnaissance Cobra is what it was. It's just the only satellite ship, I mean really small satellite ship, that actually has a displacement device, which is...
Okay.
Which is crazy, but hey, it works. I wasn't sure if I was going to need it or not, because I didn't know what they didn't tell us what the battle was going to be. You know,
right? Well, so, that's the usual thing with the Battle Force 550 is that you put together a force blind, and then you end up seeing exactly how bad you get messed over by the scenario, like. And my force is that I put together a pirate raiding force that was really well put together, I thought. And I've only got two ships of dedicated labs and one probe launcher. And it's an information gathering scenario where the other guy is using fleet ships, and every one of them has a probe launcher, and every one of them has dedicated labs. So, yeah.
Real good.
Yeah, that's no good. It's no bueno.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay.
That's so do we like get to the topic? Or
yeah.
We,
oh
like,
yeah. Well, which brings us actually a way to carry this over to the actual topic for this evening is that one thing I was going to mention is that, of course, with the whole number of ships that got added. Later on, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, people always want to have more ships added to Starfleet Warlord. Here's the problem. With Starfleet Warlord, you're representing, for most part, you've got two numbers, the offensive potential and your defensive potential. That's it. You still have, you know, shields and hit points, and then you can have other things like you can actually have T-bombs, you can have PFs, and you can have fighters on ships.
But it's much more massively abstracted.
Massively abstracted. So
what?
Then you have two ships.
Probably not as much as Federation and Empire does, but right.
Yeah, that was my next suggestion. Is like, have you considered going to that level of abstraction?
No. But it's because that's the way Starfleet Warlord was built. And I believe more in what what how Starfleet Warlord has set up with the actual expendables, you know, the T-bombs, the PFs, the fighters, actually added part of it. And also shields, hit points, things like that, that also take an important role in the actual rules. But the big thing there is that with those, all those variants, all those little tweaks here and there, you could, if I represent every single ship, some things that are in Starfleet Warlord would be nullified. And that is that one of the things with Starfleet Warlord is that if you purchase a ship, let's say you purchase a CA, and if I allowed someone also to purchase like a CA plus, they might have a one, let's say they might have a one attack factor difference. Because a plus, well, it can access more firepower. But the difference is so little. But normally, when you if you purchase two of the same ship, you have a penalty. You get a 10% penalty for buying the second another ship of the exactly the same type. So now you've gotten rid of that 10% penalty.
And so why did they put the penalty in it in the first place?
I don't know. Ask Bruce Graw. He's the original designer of this game.
Now, are probably you just basically
to keep somebody from turning around and buying one dreadnought and 400 frigates?
Yeah, because there is no control. There's no command and control with the fleets. This mob rules.
Right.
So,
but you could have that if you adapted a little bit of the Bedden Empire way of looking at it with the command ratings and all that they have.
Right. So,
it would probably require too much of an overhaul to be just something simple.
And every single person who plays it now would be very pissed off and say, this is not Starfleet Warlord. And I'd have to agree. Because it wouldn't be.
You nerfed my special favorite scenario busting that I spent years working out. How dare you nerf my fun? That's what you would hear.
I want my plus one back.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't get me started on some players I've interacted with, which is they have the unfortunate question to ask, how can this occur? And I go, I don't know, but it is a possibility. It's a possibility. The roles are such that it actually can happen. Case in point, a less strong force can actually beat a stronger force. It is possible. Likely? Possible? Yes. So, and people go, well, how did my fleet get destroyed by this stronger force? Well, it's because the rolls came out that way. It is random about how much damage each of the attacking units gives. So, anyhow, get into what the plan for tonight was, and this might be a part one of part two because of I've not actually gone through this. I've not done a test run, I'm not sure how long this will take me to explain it, which is Starfleet Warlord. I'm starting with a very basic beginner's game. I call it a learner's game, even though I marked it as a T game, which is a T games or test games. It's small. Very small universe. You have three sectors by three sectors. You have the one sector in the middle. So there's nine sectors in total. And in sector, what's called one, sector 1-1 is the center sector because the first sector, the upper left-hand corner is 0-1. Right? Yeah. I think that's right. No, sorry, that's 0-0. Next one over on the first row is 1-0. The next one over is 3-0. Next line, it'd be 0-1, then 1-1, then 1-2. 2-1. Because it's X is the first number, Y is the second number. So what I've shown on the screen is a very, basically, it is the default build for a game, which is purchase a one warp gate, one police cruiser, one free trader, one, I forget the volume PR is, something. Then we have civilian light, a small freighter. Then we have a Hydran scout, a LDR police scout. Then we have a Win AMS, I forget what that is. Then we have Orion Slaver and a Klingon E3. By default, that's deemed a good beginning round. Now this starts with Y-164. Now,
AMS, that sounds like an auxiliary minesweeper.
That might be it.
Probably.
Hey guys, I'm gonna go to sleep now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Good night, Barry.
Yeah, good night.
Good night, Barry.
Good night.
So just like F&E, Starfleet Warlord basically has the ships that are available for purchase per year. They have a beginning year, which they are now available for you to purchase. Now, real quick background of Starfleet Warlord when it comes to setting, as they say, setting the scene. And that is, the Starfleet Warlord is in the greater metallurgic cloud. This is way back, way in the future. Things supposed to be like Y 2030, I think it is, something like that. And what you can do, what you're doing is you're a corporation who wants to exploit the greater metallurgic cloud by, you know, gathering resources, including, you know, people, dilithium crystals and the like, and ore. And you want to build up your corporation. And one way, you need to purchase ships. And ships are actually delivered. They're not, you don't make them at bases, you have them delivered. Now, there's only home office you can deliver your ships to your home office, which is basically, it's a planet or whatever. It's what's called a major site located in your home sector. And you can have the ships delivered there. Or if you purchase warp gates, which is what I'm doing as part of my initial orders, and actually, I'm pretty sure I set this up as a standard game, which means that it also will be, I think it should also give me a second warp gate by default. And the idea of that is so that you can actually have ships delivered away from your home office. So you don't have to have everything delivered to your home office and then have the ships go fan out from your home office. Yeah, the beginning build starts at your home office. But, you know, later on, after you get on, Sooks, excuse me, you have the warp gates, you know, bought and delivered to home office, you know, and you can actually buy them later on too. But then you can move those to either farther away in your home sector or into other sectors around you. The idea being is that you can deliver them closer to where you need them to be, because usually the first goal of the game is to capture your local sector, meaning Go and get, you know, and actually take control of every single of the major sites. After you take control of all the major sites, they're like planets, gas giants, There's a bunch of them. I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. Haven't played it enough to have them memorized yet. And after you do that, then you get a 100 EEP bonus. And the big surprise, the ships are purchased using EEPs. Now, each one of these plants produces certain resources, whether it's people or dilithium crystals or ore or something else. There's a fourth, and I always forget what the fourth is. But you need all four of those to create an EEP. So if you have, like, let's say you have 50 people, you have 40, or you have 100 dilithium crystals, and you've got 10 of the last one, which I forget. That means you only have 10 EEPs. Now, there are certain orders that you can do later on, which you actually can exchange. Like, you have a lot of dilithium crystals, but I need more of the other thing. Okay, fine. You can try to give 90 of it, like, let's say 50 of the lithium crystals, so you can have like 60, but it won't be 60 because it's also part of that. Chrissy has a DOS app, and also you can. There's a Java-based graphical app, and I'll get to that. What you're seeing on screen right now, you're seeing what's called the Starfleet Warlord engine. So I'm starting it here because we have to start with the beginning and the initial build. But you know, you can actually later on do an exchange, and that costs you. I think it's worth 10 or 20% tax on converting between the different kind of resources. And in the normal game, you only can do it once every four turns. So at the moment here's the orders. I already told you what those were. For the only thing you can do on the first initial build is purchase ships. That's the only thing that you're going to be doing the first turn. So, okay, here I'm going to execute that order, and good. There's mine, and we get and say run the turn anyway. Yes, and there. So now I've run the turn. Now let me show you the results. Oops, wrong one. Boop, boop. Thank you. And that's going to be. Let me go here. This is stuff that you guys, most people don't see. And that is what I do to have it so that the turns look nice and pretty. Because the original game has basically what you print them out, and what the output of the engine end are those printed turns meant for like a dot matrix printer. So there, let's go run that, prints out the maps and so forth. Okay, like this. I'm going to do this and copy it here. Now, these are different things. Let me bring up orders. What happens is when you get your turn, you'll get these three different PDFs, and also give you a text file. The text file is actually also used for the actual email itself. So in here, you'll see that, okay, we got two warp gates because I was already given one to start off the game. And then here's all the ones I purchased, and each unit has a different speed. Warp gates can move twice a turn. When it comes to the police, that can move 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 every turn. And then, of course, the fat The free trader can move six. So it's very fast, so it can move very often. Then down here, you have what's called extra orders. Extra orders are like one of those things that, of course, is purchase ships. You also can buy different things. You can buy drones. You can buy fighters. You can buy PFs. Now, obviously, just like Starfleet Battles, PFs aren't available until Y1. I want to say Y184, but I'm pretty sure it's Y180 is when they're made available. For actually, I
think interceptors come in at 180 and PFs proper come in at
84. Okay. I'm just forgetting if the Starfleet Warlord, if it allows you to purchase them as a Y180 and then assign them to a ship at that point or not. I forget. Your names are obviously automatically generated for them. Some of these are some of the original playtesters for Starfleet Warlord. I'm willing to bet Christine was one. Masterson was probably another one. Gandolfi, possibly another one. I don't know theirs, but I heard from one of the original playtesters, Roger Reardon, who actually his name is actually in here for one of the ships, because each kind of ship would get its own name assigned to it by default, and then it would be like, in the case the police, it's Federation Police, so it's FPOL-1, which is number one, and it's called Masterson-1, so. It does that. Now, if you want to see what the report is, you can see the report. This is what a normal report would be. It spits out at the very top your financials. I started with 1,000 EEPs to start the game. I got 100 EEPs from my home office. That by default, everybody's home office generates 100 EEPs. So my new total is 1,100. So I actually start off the game with not 1,000, but 1,100. And that after that, and since before that, I have normally it would give all, you know, it would tell you, okay, if you move your ships, it would say, okay, you ran over this territory. Or if you prospected a planet, because that's one way to actually gather up EEPs, is prospecting different sites in your sector. In this case, okay, then we got, you know, and this is run down, okay, you know, purchase a warp gate, that's for 200 EEPs. You bought a civilian warp gate, CWG2, mobile warp gate 2. Keeps on going, okay, and this, right, and okay, this on here, like for 60 apes, you bought a Gwyn auxiliary minesweeper, which people were correct, there was an auxiliary minesweeper. And what was that other one I was in? Oh, the PR, Astholian Repair Corvette, okay, and so after the end, at the post game, I've actually. At the end of this turn, I've got 379 EEPs flat, and I got a number of legendary officers. I got one legendary weapons, one legendary engineer, one legendary navigation, one, I forget what the D is. I think a legendary science officer, a legendary marine, LA, I forget what the LA is. And so forth. And then you get a scanning report here.
Yes,
Kitty. Which this is what in text form the different sites in the terrain scan. And then you'll get a little announcement from Galactics and so forth down here. A reminder of things. Mm-hmm. And then and I'll show you And what I'll show you is also the sector map. Because every time you scan, either anytime you scare the terrain, because at the beginning of the game you always get a terrain scan of your home sector. Now, when you go on to the really bad thing is that when you go on to the next sector over, you're blind. You don't know what's in. Currently, I don't know what is in like 01, 04 over here. I don't know what's in 1602 over here. So I can, if I go, when I go blindly into the next sector over, I'm hoping that I don't run into something that will kill my my ship. Now for this one, I need to give me a sec here. And my home office is 0711. So right here, DP, here's where I'm starting. Now, for the next turn, what I'm going to want to do is I'm actually going to want to move. And to move, I let me see. I've got a couple, a repair planet here, an RP is a repair planet with an asteroid field. You got empty space. Because what these things mean, when you have, it's basically point terrain plus area terrain. The point terrain can be like a planet. In the case of ES means empty space. Here's a dual planet right here with empty space, which is wonderful. That means it won't kill you. Repair planet, empty space. That's also very nice because what repair planets do is they refill your repair points for your repair ships. Down here, this is the heat zone, which is not that bad. Actually, I've got a pretty good number of, I got good terrain here, really good terrain. The only ones that can be kind of nasty, you got to be careful of, is here, the OM. OM means old minefield. The only thing they really can go through a minefield is a minesweeper. So you got to be careful about that because otherwise you get blown up. And I'm actually fortunate in that I have no actually, nebulas are overall pretty okay. You got okay, the heat zones, and there's another one, which is the RZ. I forget what that is.
Radiation zone.
Yeah, radiation zone. Thank you. Here's a CO, which is a comet. Another comet up here, you know. So that's what a map would look like. Now, oops, I forgot to do one thing. Dun, 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 excuse me. Which I forgot to do one thing. Which is bring this up. Bump, bump, bump. There. I forgot to actually generate the turn. I need to fix this. I have one thing I've not fixed, and I really should have fixed by now, which is boom. Never mind the man behind the curtain.
Well, Jeff and I could talk about, you know, Tholians while you would be.
I was just thinking, how could we vocalize the Tholian equivalent of the Jeopardy thing?
Yeah.
Oops, I got that wrong. That was supposed to be quote, and that's supposed to be a single quote, right? There, like that, and then let's do this. Boom. Okay. Now, do this. And star.to4. This. Oops. To4. There. Now zip it up. Now, if I go over to all I need to do is go open. Huh? I could have sworn. Maybe I put it someplace else. No, I didn't put it there. Where did I put it? Mm-hmm. Well, come on. I could have sworn. Or did I spell it differently? Oh, I bet you I spelled it differently. If I have to, I will. Nope. Okay, well, guess what, folks? Somehow I lost it.
Okay. Welcome to retro gaming.
And go here. Da, 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 da.
That feels so retro. Semi nostalgic y there.
Okay, come on. I'm hoping this works. Come on. Why did I can't believe it's. It shouldn't take this long.
Hey, Paul?
Yes.
Command space and start typing the file name.
Well, the problem is here. This. What the freak, man? This is slow as all get out. 100 kilobytes per second?
Good grief.
So, is this the Amiga version?
Oh, I know. This is the Commodore 64 version, and they're having to read it off of a 1541.
Oh, crap. Okay, well, unfortunately, I don't have time to do this. What I'm going to do is actually I'm going to pause it here because this is going to take way longer, and I could have sworn on a stack of Bibles that I actually had it installed, which it might have been installed, and when I upgraded yesterday, it got removed. I'm not sure why, but it's possible it got removed because it is kind of old. I have not signed it with the latest certificate of mine, which is something I probably should do is work on that. But I'm just shocked that it is just, I mean, this is ridiculously slow. It should not be this slow. So that is the beginning of it, you know, that okay, don't mind this. Okay, goodbye. Sorry that Microsoft said, oh, you want to update Microsoft Word and Excel right now? No. And let's not get started on that at the moment, because at the moment it's broken, i.e. I can't update it. Every time I update it, it throws an error, and I have no clue what the cause is.
Where?
You know, doesn't show me an error that makes sense. It just says update error.
Does it give you a number you can look up?
Nope. No number, no nothing. That's the frustrating part.
Wow. It
doesn't give me an indication that, oh, there was a permission problem. There was, you know, not enough space on the drive, which can that cannot be possible. You know, or so forth. You know, I understand.
Maybe it's corrupted.
That's possible. There's one thing I have not tried doing, and I really don't want to do it, which is
registry.
No, the Macs don't have registries. Which is delete the like Microsoft Word. The other possibility is actually doing something which, if I swear on, I will just kill it.
What?
Which is one of those things I do for my Mac is I never run as administrator. I know that could be a pain for me, but it also makes me feel at least a little more protected in case I do something really dumb. That won't give full control to my machine to somebody if I happen to click on something stupid. You know?
Okay.
So it's possible that it requires you to be an administrator to install things. Normally, you don't. Normally, they have a way of getting around that using like Helper.
You probably just nailed the problem right then.
So, yeah, which means I have to log out of, at least not.
But don't forget that obsolescence is also a possibility too.
Well, which one?
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, I'm using Office 365, so I always, and I pay my $100 and some bill every single year to have a subscription to Microsoft Office. Number one, number two, this is a MacBook Pro M1, which I just bought last year. So neither one are obsolete. So,
no, I thought you were talking about the Starfleet Warlord game.
Starfleet Warlord game, yeah, is kind of old. I agree there, but just like Starfleet Battles, it's kind of old too. But they have fans of it, and people like to play. And definitely people like to play Starfleet Warlord. I'm hoping to show off.
How does Office 365 play into this?
Well, the only way is because, well, no, because unfortunately you weren't looking, and the check updates thing came up from Microsoft Office. So those.
And it's just kind of, it said, here, I need to do stuff now.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
gotcha.
Okay, and Jeff is back. Somehow we lost
him. Hi, Jeff.
He doesn't have his microphone yet. As soon as he plugs in his microphone,
still saying hello.
We lost him again.
Oh man.
Anyhow, I'm going to wait just for a moment to see if Jeff will come back, and hopefully have a microphone this time. So then we can say goodbye.
Aw.
As soon as I can, Jeff. Ah, there's your mic. There you are, Jeff.
Good night, everybody.
Hey, good evening, Jeff. How you doing?
Long time no see. We're here.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap up for this evening. Well, consider that as part one of a two-part series on introduction to Starfleet Warlord, and basically show you to people how to play Starfleet Warlord, at least the mechanics of it. For those of you that actually are quite interested in it, even to the awful introduction so far, if you are part or on Facebook, look for Starfleet Warlord. There's a Starfleet Warlord group there. And one thing I did is I pinned, there is a tutorial. It's called Starfleet Warlord 101. And that will show you, that gives you some tactical advice, some strategic advice, what you do and don't want to do when you're playing the game. But it doesn't show you the mechanics of it. But at the very least, you can find out a little more information that way. It's a great group of people, and if you want to, we'd be happy to have your lovely face join the Starfleet Warlord group. And on Facebook, that's assuming you're on Facebook and not have abandoned it like some people. So, Oh, geez. Don't get me started. Chris knows he's mentioning the Apple II floppy drives were worse than the 1541s. 1541s are pretty nice drives when it comes to the Commodore 1541 drives. So I remember them.
They were just bit banging an extra slow because they didn't want to buy a UART.
Yeah, that was the funny part about those Commodore 64 devices. They were called smart devices.
Yeah.
I forget why they were called smart.
So you could plug and play
it. Because slow didn't make the grade with the marketing folks.
Yeah, but yeah, come on. This was back in the 80s.
I know, I had one.
Yeah.
So speedy, there was no such thing as a really fast computer. Really?
Okay, I will grant you that faster than the thing before it. Faster than the data set. And I used cassettes for data storage, and it was a pain. The thing is that actually got to a machine that had a proper data bus to send things on through the digital pipes with, it was so much better.
Understood. Okay. Well, Jeff, you have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Doug, get well, and you have a good night.
Thanks. You too.
So, started a nice little tutorial. Got to talk about a little bit about different things of the Empires of Starfleet battles, and some thoughts on the ships from of old to newer, anyway. And some of those things in the past that we'd rather forget. But anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.